Hello, everyone, and welcome to Once Upon a Time, the unofficial guide. I'm your host, Thomas, and I'm joined here by my fantabulously fabulous co-host, Christina. Say hello.
Hello.
All right, so we're going to just dive right into it, and we're going to talk about this week's episode of Once, titled Dreamcatcher. Ooh. And we'll find out that the title was aptly named, or this episode was aptly named. So, Christina, what are your biggest takeaways? Give us an overview. How were you satisfied?
I was more satisfied with this episode than I have been since the second one. Because we actually got to see things that were currently going on in Storybrooke instead of only seeing flashbacks.
Yeah, I feel like it was a big bite out of, you know, the Once Upon a Time pie, because we still got to see all the drama and everything that was taking place in Camelot, and while also how that is now affecting the things happening in Storybrooke. So I think that in itself was a great way to combine the flashbacks with Storybrooke in its present. The other thing is, basically we find out that Merlin was released from the tree, and that Emma and Regina were the ones to do it, and Henry.
Yes.
Inadvertently. So I think that's a great opportunity to talk about Merlin and all the questions that we have about him. So, Christina, I almost called you Regina.
Well, it rhymes. I was glad to finally get an answer, you know, if Merlin really was in the tree or if it was somebody or something else. So we find that out. The first scene when we see him with the, what we assume is the original Dark One, I want to know, did that Dark One somehow, put Merlin on a path to make bad choices? I'm wondering if the original Dark One was his first true love, Nimue, because we know episode 8 will be entitled Nimue. And if the darkness sought her out like it sought out Emma at the end of season 4.
So watching the scene unfold, I was thinking a few things. One, are we correct to assume that that Dark One that Merlin was confronting is the original Dark One? I loved their appearance. I wonder if that's an indication of their character. And I was also thinking he's already holding the dagger, so there's even more to learn, even more backstory with that. And I was wondering how he obtained the dagger. From there, I was also thinking, when did Merlin have the opportunity, the chance to warn young Emma about the Sword in the Stone?
Mm-hmm. I was wondering how that fit into the timeline, too, because if that was supposed to be the original Dark One, then how did that fit into the timeline of everything else that's happened in the Enchanted Forest and Storybrooke for Merlin to come to our world and see Emma when she's 7 years old?
Right. And for me, the reason I would assume that's the original Dark One is the way he enters that field, right? And he's kind of moving around. It's just a frenetic ball of darkness. And then he finally is like, Dark One, I summon thee. And then, you know, it forms and it drops down in front of him, and we see that it's that cloaked, masked figure. So just the fact that it's just not contained and it's just so wild leads me to think that it's an early Dark One, whereas Rumple and then the one before him, they were just regular people that obtained the darkness, the power. But other than that, there's like no real reason to assume that was the first one, but who knows?
Because the rest of the Dark Ones are able to kind of poof themselves, like, I guess Regina kind of coined that phrase. You know, they magic themselves from one place to another, and we see this poof of smoke.
Right. And it's like they, for the most part, can integrate into society and interact with people, and they're not the whirling balls of darkness that we saw in that scene. So the other thing that I noticed is Merlin is hot. I'm just throwing that out there. He's, I'm a fan.
Yes, he's very handsome.
What are some of the other things that you wanted to talk about?
Well, again, at the end of season 4, The Apprentice said that Merlin had battled the darkness and he was the only one to defeat the darkness the first time. So I'm wondering, you know, is the darkness just a conglomeration of people's darkest desires, or is it unto itself its own entity? So, and if so, then how or what created the darkness?
Yeah, so I tend, maybe this is my existential side, but I tend to think of the darkness, in quotes, as something abstract. Mm-hmm. And so, and thinking of it that way, if Merlin was able to defeat the darkness, that's this abstract, like you said, collective unconscious or collective manifestation of everyone's darkest tendencies or actions, then yes, he is truly the greatest, you know, most powerful magician or witch or whatever you want to, whatever term is appropriate to, you know,
wizard.
But if it's a person, if it's something man-made, then I, well, sure, great, he was able to defeat it, or him, her, but the power sort of lessens with that, you know? Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the dream catchers.
Okay, so Regina thinks that the dream catchers are what Emma used in order to erase everyone's memory when they came over with the curse. But Emma tells Regina that in Camelot that when she held up the dream catcher, that it just showed her people's memory. She didn't even have to use it on anybody. So I don't think that Emma did use the dream catchers to erase people's memories. I think this is just her hobby, like Gold's hobby was spinning straw into gold. And I think that with each dream catcher she makes, more of what happened in Camelot and in people's past are revealed to her. So this is her way of gaining information on everybody, like Gold did with his foresight.
Right. I think, see, my theory is a little different. I feel like she did say it, you know, this dark magic is more unpredictable than any of the magic she's used. Mm-hmm. So maybe by the time they freed Merlin, Emma was able to find a way, or maybe, see, that leads me to, this is a sidebar question, but I want to know when Emma decided to, like, create this curse or whatever it is, mm-hmm. to bring everyone back to Storybrooke and hit reset. I also, don't let me forget, I want to know when Emma decided to break Henry's heart in order to get his tears.
Yes.
Like, when did that happen? But we'll get back to that. But that leads into her freeing Merlin, and then eventually, I'm assuming, leads into them going back to Storybrooke, which we didn't see in this episode, but I mean, it seems logical that was the next step. But I think the dream catchers serve a dual purpose, serves as a way to, you know, keep the voices calm and quiet, mm-hmm. to be her hobby, and also to preserve everyone's memories.
Right. I have a new theory. I'm also wondering if these dream catchers, like the Once Upon a Time book, if when the people of Storybrooke hold their own memory, if it will bring back their memories, if that's how the curse will break for them. I mean, it's just an
No, it's a good idea. I was wondering that too. I wanted to know if you picked up on this. The scene where Regina's looking through the dream catcher and she discovers that Emma ripped out Violet's heart. Mm-hmm. Whose perspective is that from?
I think she meant it as Violet's perspective, because at first she said, I think Robin said, you know, are these Henry's memories? And she said, no, I think it's Violet's.
Okay.
So I think it was from Violet's perspective.
Regina, it looked like she was swiping. Like, it was like, well, what? Whose memories? And then she's like, oh, it looks like Violet. And she swipes like she's fast forwarding.
Or just like in a phone when you're swiping through the pictures.
Yeah. So I was like, this is so modern. I don't know if that's it, but I don't know if that's what was really happening when they were filming or what. But it, from our perspective, it just kind of looked that way. But in that scene, I loved how the storyline with the horse and Emma ripping out Violet's heart parallels Regina's story. With she was a stable yes. girl and loved horses, same with Snow, but and her mom thought she was doing the best for her. What did you think about that?
Well, I'm kind of on the fence because
wait, nobody likes a fence sitter. Tell me what you really feel.
Well, I'm torn because I feel like Emma really does have Henry's best interests at heart, or at least in her mind she does. And I know she's trying to work to help save herself from this darkness, but at the same time, and I know that they were under a time constraint, but there had to be a different way to get what they needed besides breaking Henry's heart. And her own mother, Snow White, would have said, you know, there's always a better way. It might be harder, but you can, you know, do the right thing.
Absolutely. In the argument that Regina had with Emma on the doorstep, I was
in Storybrooke.
Yeah. I was totally on Regina's side, and credit to Lana and her, just credit to Lana, because you could really see that she was struggling to convey to Emma that she has always been on her, everyone's on her side, and they want to trust her. They see the goodness in her. They just need to be given, they need to be given the benefit of the doubt, just as much as Emma is demanding them to just simply trust her.
Right.
And you could see the struggle with that, but also the will and just the unwillingness to allow Emma to manipulate and to really, you know, delve deeper into the darkness, because she knows Emma's better than that. And you could see all of that in that short scene. And I was just like, oh, I kind of felt that after Regina said, well, my mom thought I was, you know, she was doing the best thing. She, you know, just making the best choice she had available to her. It looked like Emma had this oh no face, like she regretted, you know.
Well, I feel like she does regret it, because when she was clutching that dream catcher to her chest, it looked like the same one that Regina took. So if that truly was the memory from Violet's perspective, then she was crying, and you know, she really did regret her decision to have to, you know, break Henry's heart.
Yeah. I'm wondering, though, after she takes Regina's tears, if that's the moment, if she had already staged the moment with Violet.
I'd also like to know, is Emma truly dark, or is she trying to reforge Excalibur to eradicate the light magic, or is she trying to reforge it to eradicate the dark magic, or is it something else? Because
girl,
I mean, some of the things that she said throughout the episodes, she's the only one who has her memories from what happened during those 6 weeks in Camelot, so we don't truly know what that last minute decision of hers was, or what happened during those last few minutes or days or whatever that made Emma feel like she didn't have any other choice but to create a curse or something to bring everybody back to Storybrooke. And until we find that out, it's hard to determine, well, you know, her motivations are based on, you know, evil or dark or light magic.
Right. Well, I mean, two things. My reaction to that is her intentions don't matter. We saw this when she was confronting Rumpelstiltskin, and he was like, well, I had the most noble of tensions. Mm-hmm. Everyone knew everything I was doing was for my son.
Right.
But the fallout was never good. Mm-hmm. And I kept pushing people away further and further despite my best intentions. And that was proven by the end of this episode, mm-hmm. where Henry is heartbroken. And for a second time, I think the second time was worse than the first time.
Oh, yeah, big time.
You know? Unless she knows something that everyone else doesn't know yet that is going to save their lives, I don't feel like becoming a Dark One is really just going to serve her in the way she, like, in the most heroic way.
Mm-hmm.
I also feel that based on the last few moments of the episode where Merlin says, yeah, of course I could free you, but you also have to want it. You want, or be equipped to relinquish the darkness from your heart. And by the end of the episode, she's used magic continuously. And I feel like maybe she just wasn't ready to let it go.
But we still don't know what her end game is. She hasn't told anybody what she's planning. And she keeps it secret. She finally let it slip to Regina tonight that they did free Merlin, but we still don't know where Merlin is. Mm-hmm. And if he was the reason why she ended it, I think he is the reason why she cursed everybody and brought them back to Storybrooke. But we don't know if Merlin came back with them.
Yeah. Again, based off of tonight's episode, there's a few things like, when she was freeing Merlin from the tree with all that, you know, that power, you could see after she had freedom, you know, the sense of accomplishment and pride on her face, like, wow, I did this. And I could see her not wanting to give that up.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the most unpredictable and powerful magic she's ever experienced.
Right.
And I could also see how maybe there's a little bit more to Merlin.
Mm-hmm.
Just only because of his attitude and his demeanor.
Right.
When he freed Snow and Charming from the curse that Arthur had placed them under, that smirk on his face and the way that his eyes looked, it, you know, had kind of, I wouldn't say sinister, but the arrogant demeanor. And a lot of times that is, you know, just an outward expression of a lot of underlying issues.
And I don't know, maybe this is a stretch, but when Sir Morgan told Henry when he in Storybrooke, and he's humble, that's a mm-hmm. good trait for a hero. Maybe that's alluding to Merlin's lack of humility. Like, maybe it's a tiny, tiny clue. Maybe it's a stretch for me to draw these conclusions.
Well,
but
I think Merlin and Arthur, because both of them have shown arrogant attitudes in episodes.
Yeah. So, I mean, and then there's a lot of villains tend to fall in this one archetype that they're, you know, arrogant mm-hmm. and cocky, and then that ends up being their demise. And it's not just about being arrogant, it's
right.
about the arrogance representing you taking things for granted.
Mm-hmm. Really quickly too, like Rumpel has always said, magic always comes with a price. I want to know what the price is that Merlin paid. I mean, you know, was Nimue's demise his fault, and that's why he decided, or is that what put him on a path to be arrogant? Also, speaking of Arthur, I want to know, is Arthur, when he was talking with Snow White and Prince Charming in Storybrooke, when he was saying that the Excalibur could be used to get rid of the light magic or dark magic, you know, is he... are his intentions to get rid of the light magic or the dark magic? And is he truly, you know, what people would term a villain? Mm-hmm. Or is he trying... does he know something about Arthur that the rest of us don't?
Right. Like, they almost had a standoff. You could tell there is something about Merlin that was dismissive towards Arthur.
Also, Arthur accused Merlin of false prophecies. I want to know what those false prophecies were.
Were they the prophecy he was running on based off of the sword, pulling the sword?
Right.
And see, I interpreted it as Arthur was just blowing things out of proportion, and it just wasn't what Arthur expected.
Right.
I feel like the prophecy was fulfilled. Like, yeah, he pulled the sword from the stone and became king, but, you know, Arthur is just not, that's not enough for him.
Well, and two, Excalibur wasn't whole when he pulled the sword from the stone. And so if he doesn't have the full Excalibur, you know, he thought that the kingdom wouldn't, or the people wouldn't follow him as king.
Right. But that was an assumption on his end.
Mm-hmm.
Really quickly, just wrapping things up in the last couple of minutes, I wanted to point out some of the smaller things. For me, I was kind of wondering, okay, they're running around trying, like Nancy Drew, trying to find Rumple. But why don't they just use a locator spell? I know they're probably tired of using them, but they did it last season. So somebody should, somewhere should be like, wait, guys, let's use a locator spell.
If Regina was able to magic Henry's scarf into her hand, there's no reason why she couldn't have done the same thing with Rumple or had Belle go into his pawn shop and pick something up.
Yeah, I don't know what the heck. And it's probably more, you know, entertaining and creates more tension and drama to have them on foot looking and finding all these clues. But if I were Belle, I would be like, I don't want to waste any time, you know. The other thing that stuck out to me was this episode, the magic that was being used was pretty much coming from predominantly Emma and then Regina and then Merlin. And I'm thinking, so they could have, they break into Emma's new house. They could have found what they needed to find and then poofed themselves out. Like, come on. Why did they have to, like, scurry off on foot? Like, who's... are they seriously forgetting magic?
What do you think?
I know Regina has magicked multiple people out before, so I was dumbfounded as to why she didn't do it this time. But then if they hadn't gone out on foot, then they wouldn't have found that dream catcher.
Yeah. So, but still... I'm just like...
And I'm still wanting to know where Mal and Lily are. And when are we actually going to get to see more of the people from Storybrooke?
And I also want to know, how does Henry have cell reception in Camelot or Battery? You know, well, it said when we saw him, like, playing with his phone, like... he had a full battery, but still, if they were going to go through with that date and watch the movie, the phone life would have been dead. Mm-hmm. And how do they have power to have, like, to warm up the lasagna?
Well, I think Granny said they had a backup generator, but still, that backup generator only has, you know, so much life.
Yeah.
And just to keep the lights and things running in there, that would eat it up in a heartbeat.
Yeah. The other thing is in Storybrooke, so I guess Violet has a phone. He's like, did you get my text? So if they're using phones, they, it would have been funny. I know they didn't have any time. And I, that's why I think we didn't see, a scene with Emma deciding, oh, I have to get somehow break Henry's heart. Maybe they cut it for time, but, I kind of was wondering So these people have phones. They've never used a phone in their life. They don't know. They don't know what a phone is. Maybe they had like a tutorial, like a class, you know, how to use 20th century technology or 21st century technology. I don't know.
Well, I know it took Hook a while too, and we only saw a couple episodes last season with him, you know, and he calls it a talking phone.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Violet obviously seemed to know what she was doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just the little tiny things that, you know,
stick out. Like a sore thumb sometimes.
Yeah.
Really quickly before we leave, in the upcoming episode, there is a bear that is after Rumpelstiltskin. I want to know if the bear that we see in that episode is Merida's mother, or is it that mythical evil bear that was in Brave? I don't know if it was her uncle or something like that, but...
Oh, yeah. I think it was her uncle, because I think the story... I don't know if it's her uncle. I don't think it's her uncle, but the story is three brothers, right?
I'm just curious, you know, is that bear going to be her mom or that evil one, or is it just a bear? But it did, from all appearances, it didn't look like it was just some random bear that they found in the woods.
It was massive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it looked evil.
So, thanks for listening. If you like what you heard, please rate, subscribe, and go ahead and leave a comment. And I guess I have nothing else to say. This has been the unofficial guide to Once Upon a Time. My name's Thomas, and I've been joined by my fabulous commentator,
Christina.
And we'll catch you next Monday. Bye.